Ram, please read.
You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for the December 20th reading of The Environment. My name is John. Today, we'll start with the following main article from the Sierra Club magazine. Wild wolves return to Colorado. Wolf paws are finally on the ground, just as Colorado voters had intended. Written by Lindsay Botts. With any remaining time, we'll dip into an article from the Nature Conservancy magazine. At long last, wolves have returned to Colorado. On December 18th, Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials released five wolves, two females and three males, on state park lands roughly 100 miles west of Denver. The release marked a historic moment that has been 3 years in the making after Colorado voters approved Proposition 114, which directed state officials to reintroduce wolves by the end of 2023. With these initial releases, the state is well on its way to realizing a vision that wolf advocates have been working toward for decades. Conservation groups, some of which helped craft the language of Proposition 114 and defended it in court, were thrilled by the release. "This is a historic moment that makes me proud to be a Coloradan," Katie Schneider, Rockies and Plains representative of Defenders of Wildlife, said in a press release. "Now we must allow these wolves to lead us toward the first self-sustaining wolf population Colorado has seen in over 80 years. The wolf reintroductions are the culmination of dozens of stakeholder meetings that incorporated input from thousands of people, including technical experts and local residents. Colorado Parks and Wildlife also coordinated with federal officials on the release, as gray wolves are still federally listed as an endangered species in some parts of the country. The wolves' endangered species status proved to be a sticking point as recently as last week, when ranching groups filed an 11th-hour lawsuit in an attempt to stop the reintroductions before they began. The groups asserted that state and federal wildlife agencies failed to properly consider the impacts of releasing wolves as required for federal decisions. A judge on Friday denied the motion to halt the process, effectively giving Colorado Parks and Wildlife a green light to proceed. Pulling off a successful first wolf release in Colorado touched all corners of our agency, Reed DeWalt, Colorado Parks and Wildlife's Assistant Director of Aquatic, Terrestrial, and Natural Resources, said in a statement. "This has been 2 years of work to approve the plan, plus another year of work to secure our first source population and get us to this release day." The five wolves released in Colorado are all wild animals that came from Oregon, where there are some 180 wolves dispersed across an estimated 24 packs. Staff with Colorado Parks and Wildlife did the actual capturing of wolves, with officials from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife playing an advisory role, including helping to identify packs that have individuals to spare. The capture and release took place quickly over the span of just 2 days last weekend. The Colorado team checked each animal's health, vaccinated them against canine diseases, and made sure the wolves had no broken bones, teeth, or other ailments that might make them more reliant on livestock for food. Biologists focused on catching younger wolves, between 1 and 5 years old, that are likely to disperse from their home territories to start families of their own. Of the five released earlier this week, four are juveniles and two pairs come from the same pack. Each animal was outfitted with a GPS collar so that Colorado biologists can track their movements throughout the state. This will help biologists follow the packs, learn about territories, and attempt to keep them from preying on domesticated livestock. The wolves were released in Grand County, which includes parts of Rocky Mountain National Park and the Arapaho and Roosevelt National Forests. The area boasts abundant natural habitat, wild prey, relatively low human population density, and distance from the neighboring states of Wyoming and Utah, which have much more hostile forms of wolf management. Just last month, it was revealed that hunters lured three wolves from Colorado to Wyoming, where the wolves were killed. Colorado Parks and Wildlife staff say the ultimate goal is to have a robust, self-sustaining wolf population in the state of at least a few hundred wolves. This will likely require capturing and releasing between 30 and 50 wolves over the next 5 years. It could be a slow and difficult process due to the complications of finding wild wolves in other parts of the country. Colorado officials will likely source 5 more wolves from Oregon by the end of winter. Agreements with other states and agencies are expected in the coming years. So far, the Nez Perce tribe in Idaho has hinted at being a partner. Washington State, while unable to assist with the initial reintroductions, may also eventually partner with Colorado. In addition to being federally protected, wolves living in Colorado are listed as endangered by the state government. Once the wild population reaches 50 individuals for at least 4 consecutive years, they will be downlisted to threatened. Successful wolf recovery in Colorado could also bode well for wolf recovery at the national level. Just last week, a court approved a settlement between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services and the Center for Biological Diversity that requires the federal agency to create a national wolf recovery plan. For many wolf advocates, the rewilding in Colorado is a way to link wolf populations in the northern Rockies to wolves in the southwest and Mexico. For over half a century, wolves have been functionally extinct in Colorado, meaning they no longer perform their role as a keystone species that prevents overbrowsing by elk and deer, keeps herds healthy, and maintains wetlands. Restoration of wolves is needed, proponents argue, to restore those ecological connections. I'm looking forward to hearing howls in my backyard, Delia Malone, the wildlife chair for the Colorado chapter of the Sierra Club, said. I'm looking forward to a return to the wild. Wilderness without our major, most essential, most important carnivore is just pretty landscaped. Our next article comes to us from the Sierra Club magazine and along the same line of wolves. Switzerland grapples with the return of gray wolves. A new law will make it easier for provinces to cull wolf packs. Will they survive? This article was written by Christian Elliott. 10 years ago, high in the Alps, 2 gray wolves crossed the Italian border into Switzerland. Within a year, they had pups settling in the southern canton or province of Grisons, and the Calanda wolf pack was born. It was the first since the mid-19th century when wolves were hunted to extinction in the tiny European country better known for cheese, chocolate, and flowery alpine meadows. Since 2012, the pack has had 47 pups, with young wolves spreading out through the mountains. By 2025, barring management changes, Switzerland is projected to have over 300 wolves in 50 roaming packs. To environmentalists, the wolf's return is a rare success story in Europe's biodiversity crisis, an unexpected homecoming for a long-absent native species. But for the nation's alpine farmers and shepherds, wolves are livestock killers that represent an existential threat to their traditional way of life. Can the Swiss government find a solution to help humans and wolves coexist? The wolf is indigenous to Switzerland, so it's just natural that it should return and play a part in the ecological system, said Sarah Wehrli, a wolf conservationist for Pro Natura, Switzerland's oldest environmental organization. But we don't have any real wilderness anymore, not compared to the U.S., for example, so naturally wolves and human beings have to coexist in our small country. As they roam the Alps, Switzerland's new wolves have found easy prey in the cows, sheep, and goats that farmers set loose there to graze unsupervised during the summer months. That pastoral tradition is a significant part of the small mountain nation's cultural heritage and a major tourist attraction, maintaining the famous open alpine meadow aesthetic. In the winter, the wolves follow livestock into the valleys and populated villages. In Switzerland, the alpine space is a cultural landscape, said Ralph Manns, scientific assistant for wolf monitoring at the Swiss Foundation for Predator Science, Ecology, and Wildlife Management, or CORA, as it's called. Over hundreds of years, we've had a pastoral culture here of free-ranging sheep, goats, and cattle. In such a situation, when the wolves come back, then you have problems. Due to their rapid reproductive rate and tendency to migrate great distances and adapt to Switzerland's varied environmental conditions, it is obvious that habitat quality and food availability would allow for much larger wolf populations than what humans seem willing to tolerate, a major CORA report concluded in 2020. Manns joined CORA in 2012, just as the Calanda Pack formed in Grisons. He collects genetic samples from urine, feces, and saliva left on killed livestock from Switzerland's 26 cantons at the direction of the Federal Office of the Environment. Manns has watched the wolf population skyrocket from wandering lone wolves to dozens of well-established packs in just a decade. Last year, wolves killed over 1,000 livestock, a new record. Wolves have become an easy political scapegoat. Today, cattle, tomorrow, children, a Swiss National Council member warned in 2010. In one campaign, the political action group Cantons of Grisons and Valais Without Predators falsely claimed Swiss wolves were dangerous wolf-dog hybrids. Rural politicians have risen to prominence on the wolf issue with the support of sheep farmers who feel their traditional way of life, already highly subsidized and threatened by globalization, slipping away. As a farmer, you can focus on the wolf for all of the many problems you have, said Manns. You can put it all on the wolf. Long before wolves returned, Switzerland signed the Bern Convention, an international treaty ratified in 1979 by nearly all the European countries that list the gray wolf as a strictly protected species, meaning it should not be disturbed, captured, or killed. EU countries, under their stricter Habitats Directive, aren't able to kill wolves except in exceptional cases, but Switzerland exploited flexibility in the Bern Convention's Article 9 to enact a federal hunting law that allows cantonal hunting offices to shoot problem wolves that cause considerable damage to livestock with the consent of the federal government. As the wolf population and livestock predations have risen, so has political pressure to kill more and more wolves. You'll find not 1 year since the re-immigration into Switzerland that the Swiss Parliament does not have a discussion about wolves, Mann said. There have been 60 motions regarding wolves in the Swiss Federal Council since 2006. He joked that to an outsider visiting Parliament, it might seem like wolves are Switzerland's only problem. At every turn, anti-wolf lobbying efforts have been rebuffed. Multiple measures downgrade wolves' protected status within the Bern Convention or leave the convention entirely have ultimately failed. In 2020, Pro Natura collected enough signatures to call a national referendum on a change to the federal hunting law that would have made preventive culling of all large carnivores possible. The law was overturned by a narrow 51% majority. The vote split evenly along a rural-urban divide. The views of environmentally-minded urban communities, which also largely support rewilding long-cultivated alpine pasture land, often conflict with those of farmers who deal with the reality of wolves daily and want to maintain Switzerland's traditional open alpine landscapes as cultural, not wild places, Wehrli said. Undeterred, in 2022, Parliament passed a new version of the 2020 law that sets a canton-level wolf quota. That quota, which will be set in an ordinance in the coming months, will be calculated as the minimum number of wolves to avoid extinction, to maintain a minimum viable population. Starting in December, individual cantons will have the power to decide whether they want to cull entire wolf packs down to that quota. I would warn against thinking that killing more wolves means that damage will be reduced, said Wehrli, who is disappointed with the new law. I think there is little scientific evidence that it works. Arno Puger is a wolf manager for the Grisons Cantonal Office of Hunting and Fishing. Under the current system, he's responsible for traveling to farms and alpine pastures to confirm wolf kills and passing genetic samples onto Manns at CORA. Puger's office then compensates the farmer for their loss, and if the perpetrating wolf is identified genetically as a repeat offender, having killed more than 6 sheep or goats, sends a ranger to track down and kill the wolf. Now his job is set to change drastically. Once this quota number is defined, we will basically have to shoot wolves until we're down to that number again, said Puger. We're going to have the legal basis to remove entire wolf packs, which until now has never been done in Switzerland. Grisons is currently home to 12 to 14 packs, more than any other canton. The influential Cantonal Farmers Association has announced they want to limit Grisons to 2 wolf packs. If the quota is set that low, Puger expects the cantonal government to enforce it. Calanda, Switzerland's first wolf pack, which has called Grisson home since 2012, could even be on the chopping block. The number of wolves in a canton obviously has some influence on the number of predations, said Puger. So I think this is going to help coexistence, but it's not going to replace protecting livestock, which is still the most important thing. Centuries ago, the Swiss Alps were a different place. With the constant threat of wolves, sheep, goat, and cattle herds were constantly tended by shepherds and livestock guardian dogs. Over the wolf-free decades, that knowledge was lost, said Daniel Mettler, a mountain agriculture expert at Agridea, a Swiss NGO contracted by the government to help farmers resurrect herd protection measures. There are now training programs for professional shepherds, and Mettler's team started a breeding program 20 years ago that's now producing and training herding dogs. We still have some dogs with origins in this long tradition of protection, but they'd lost that capacity, he said. So we have to get it back with new genetic selection and new breeds. We started to import them from France and Italy. The other main protection measure does not have a long tradition, solar-powered electric fencing. Farmers can put up temporary fencing in the Alps for the full summer season for herds that are not actively shepherded or set up and tear down smaller electrified night pens daily. These measures can be costly but are highly effective and typically subsidized by the government. After 30 years of work at Agridea, farmers are now getting on board, Mettler said. 15 years ago, all farmers were really against all these prevention measures. They did not want to change. But after 15 years, the wolves are still here, and they still attack. So most of the farmers have changed their habits and are working with fences, livestock guardian dogs, and shepherds. In Grisson, the Calanda pack hasn't killed any of the 400 sheep that summer on Alp Rimoz in the Calanda Massive Range since the 20 breeders there hired shepherds, introduced 4 dogs, and began a rotational grazing system using night pens. Tourists will also need to get used to the change. There's a well-established culture of hiking in the Swiss Alps. Recreationalists are used to freely wandering along paths through meadows of cattle and sheep. Increasingly, as tourist numbers skyrocket, they're finding paths blocked by bright orange electric fencing or encountering autonomous livestock guardian dogs. The upcoming law does have a herd protection provision. If a wolf-killed livestock animal is found to have not been sufficiently protected by fencing or dogs, given the now endemic wolf threat, the farmer will not be compensated financially for his loss. Mettler hopes that means farmers will continue to protect their herds, even as the number of wolves decreases under the quota system. Currently, 90% of attacks happen in unprotected herds. When the new hunting law comes into effect in 2024, no one is sure what exactly will happen. But it is clear that Switzerland is paving its own way in wolf management, not the hands-off, let-them-be approach of most EU countries, nor the aggressive, quota-based hunting approach the Scandinavian countries have chosen. Switzerland hopes it has finally answered the question of the right balance between total protection and renewed extermination, as the 2020 CORA report put it. As wolf numbers increase across Europe, often with cross-border consequences, other nations will likely be paying close attention to Switzerland to see if theirs is the path to coexistence. This is a societal test, said Worley. It's quite challenging to live with wolves, to coexist with them. The wolf has always polarized and been emotional for people, with all these fears and myths and legends around it. But if we can succeed in living with wolves, it should be possible to live with any species and with nature in general. Our final article this afternoon, also written by Lindsay Botts. One of the largest caribou herds in Alaska is careening toward extinction. Here's why experts say the current strategy to save them will not work. In the past 3 decades, the Mlchatna caribou herd of southwestern Alaska has gone from nearly 200,000 to 12,000. Last year, the State Wildlife Agency's Board of Game started to explore ways to help the struggling population. It landed on a controversial solution called intensive management, also called predator control, which directs wildlife officials to indiscriminately kill predators. It was the first time the state included bears in the hunt, a decision that had no public process and was conducted without bear population estimates. Nearly every local environmental group and credible scientist opposed the plan. At one of the hearings, one state wildlife biologist even said that killing predators is not what's needed to help this dwindling herd. According to Nicole Schmidt, the executive director of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, it was the only time in recent memory that the Board of Game, which sets wildlife policy, went against the recommendation of state wildlife biologists. The killing spree lasted 17 days, from May 10th to June 4th. In the end, 5 black bears, 5 wolves, and 94 brown bears, nearly the entire estimated population for the area, were killed. The state has adopted this really archaic view of wildlife management with predators, said Schmidt, whose organization opposed the call. It's totally misguided. I don't think anyone who looks at the research can conclude that predator control is going to benefit the Malchatna herd in the long term. Alaska has used intensive management to suppress bear and wolf populations since the 1990s, when legislators mandated it to boost populations of moose, deer, and caribou, animals that the state would prefer people hunt. In 2011, the board authorized the first targeted wolf hunt to help the waning Malchatna herd. However, the herd continued to decline, suddenly plummeting in 2017, leaving scientists, tribes, and conservation groups wondering why. In 2020, a group of state biologists were commissioned to study the vanishing herd. They found that the most salient reasons for the decline are disease and poor body condition, which can be attributed to a lack of food. Brucellosis, a close relative of mad cow disease, is a naturally occurring disease that causes lameness, infertility, and lower birth rates. Caribou can withstand low infection levels, but wildlife officials found that over a third of the tested animals had brucellosis. Wolves and bears prey on sick animals, playing a key role in keeping herds of caribou healthy. Without them, the hypothesis goes, brucellosis was able to infect more caribou, which could offer insight into why the number of sick animals coincidentally shot up following large-scale wolf hunting. By 2017, nearly 250 wolves had been killed, and the caribou herd tanked. The conclusion was clear. Fewer predators does not equal more caribou. One mistaken belief regarding predation is that an individual killed by predators would still be alive if that predator had been removed, said Nick Demma, a state wildlife biologist, during a hearing on the research findings. This overly simplistic view of predator-prey dynamics ignores the concepts of predisposition and compensatory mortality. The scientists also found that killing predators could contribute to a lack of food. Since wolves and bears can minimize prey populations to some degree, they prevent overpopulation and overbrowsing. This is a scenario in which the reduction in the quantity and the quality of forage declines, often from overgrazing or even from trampling events, said Renee Sattler, a wildlife biologist with the state at the same hearing. This can cascade into reducing body condition. It can impact pregnancy rates, increase susceptibility to disease, and decrease survival. So why kill wolves and bears if all these other factors seem more likely to be causing the decline in caribou? Because it's an easy way to look proactive, said Schmidt. Local tribes rely on the caribou for food and sustenance. The state relies on hunting as a source of revenue. And the state requires predator control. So pretty much anyone interested in the herd agreed that something had to be done. In the case of the politically appointed Board of Game, targeting predators during the calving season was the most immediate answer, even if predation on calves is not the main reason for the herd's decline. When you're telling the communities, we're going to help you, we're going to do something, but then you do something that's not going to help them, it's just so disingenuous and such a useless use of resources, said a former state biologist who spoke on the condition of anonymity. There are some things to do, but the solutions are not shooting more predators. In an ideal world, the best solutions address the biggest problems. For the caribou, that should mean spending money on brucellosis vaccines and providing food. However, in its plan for the herd, the board does not seem keen to do either. The predator control measures will continue until at least 2028, when the program is scheduled to end. The caribou population shows signs of increasing, or if the predator controls are ineffective. But that has not always been the case. Even though these culls have already proved to be a poor way to boost caribou numbers, the board has renewed the current wolf hunt twice. The next round of wolf and bear hunts is scheduled for spring 2024. We're scapegoating bears and wolves because it's an easy way to show that you're doing something, said Schmidt. Is it sustainable management when you have to manage a herd by literally flying three aircraft and helicopters above the calving grounds and shooting things down? That's not management. That's humans playing God. And that concludes the December 20th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aincolorado.org or by calling 303-786-7777.